Inside Wirtschaft, der Podcast mit Manuel Koch.
The Federal Reserve announced that temporary limits on dividend payments and share buybacks on the US largest banks can end after June the 30th. The results on the latest stress test showed the firms have enough capital to withstand a global recession. This is the IG Trading Talk, and I'm Manuel Koch. And joining me are Salah Iddine Mumidi, the head of markets at IG, and the legendary Einstein of Wall Street, Peter Tuckman, from the New York Stock Exchange today. Guys, so good to see you.
Happy to be with you, guys.
Great to see you too, guys.
Peter, are the US banks in good condition, and is it the right thing that the Fed stops the limits on dividend payments?
You know what? Thanks for the question. It's a little bit out of my wheelhouse to know the actual effects on that. I think the bank stress test results are super important. We want to see a healthy bank's balance sheet, right? We saw that on February 12th, 2020, when before the pandemic, when the markets were trading at the high across all the indices, we saw a healthy balance sheet in the banks. And the banks were able to withstand whatever they put towards in the future. So whether how real is that, people's perception of it, the bank's strength is always a good thing, I believe, for markets and people in the investment community's perception of the economy and that. And I obviously believe that the Federal Reserve will look happily on that, that the better situation the banks are in, that the less help that they may need to give them in case of a problem. Now, you're presenting a scenario where they're saying the global bank balance sheet strength, the stress test on the banks could sustain a recession. Well, that's a great bit of information, right? Because we don't know. Last week's story was all about inflation and perhaps tapering and raising interest rates 2 years down the road. And the market didn't seem to like that story, while it was very short-term reaction, right? Because as we've seen coming into this past week here, that the market has bounced back quite radically. We did see that on Monday and Tuesday of this week. So how does a control, a lack of control, end of control of buybacks and dividends, dividend increases really affect what's going on? I think the investment community loves dividends. Some people are big dividend players. Kevin O'Leary, my friend, the shark, is a big supporter of people only investing in companies that pay dividends. It's a wonderful business model. Whatever the market's doing, going up or down, you do get a check on a monthly basis. Most people normally probably reinvest it into their portfolio. So it's sort of fun, hidden, found money that signifies the health of a company that can do that. Pay back to their investors. So it's sort of a Christmas gift in so many ways. So there are a lot of moving parts to your question. Some of them I cannot really address with that much intelligence, although I still look like Einstein. But however, the story gets bigger and bigger as it evolves. I'm going to pass it to this guy over here.
I'm totally with you in that term, because it's not easy to say. I mean, there are a lot of other factors that could drive this scenario up or down. It's just the fact that you already mentioned. It's a good information to know that they might be in shape, in good shape, in good condition.
Yes, and in good condition is also the oil price. It's still going up. And Salah, you brought us the chart of the week. It's WTI oil. So what can we see there? Which opportunities do you see for traders?
Yeah, remember the time when we have been in this talk in April, that when I was saying April, May and June is the best period for WTI, and look on the chart how wonderful the seasonal pattern played out. B, fundamental events have driven this, because recovery of the market, recovery of the real life, which is demanding, of course, energy and crude especially. And technically speaking, we have been tending from one trading range into the other, which was directly saying a trend continuation pattern. Now we broke out above $70, which is great, which also triggered the new target at the upper side, which is almost at $80. So crude is really trending on a nice trend higher. And now what I see is, this is the most interesting thing if you are a technical analyst. If you trade with trading ranges and you see a breakout, you might think, yeah, now this is the great chance to take part on it, but you need a pullback. And you can see it right now. We broke out. And now if we get a pullback, this will be my confirmation that this trend will go higher. Even if you would think, well, the price is going down, where should this be a confirmation? No, people know if a trading range is breaking, you will see a confirmation as a pullback and then going higher. So for me, we have a new target, which is almost $80. If I am a trader and I would say, okay, I would use this trend continuation pattern, I could use turbo knockouts, calls, I could buy calls, at least lower $60 to save a bit, to have a buffer for some corrections, of course. But if you think, hey guys, this is the end, and even if we would at least get the target at around 80, it's gone. We would need a new correction mode to succeed. And then you could participate by taking knockout puts at least above $80. What do you think, Peter? So this is actually a wonderful technical pattern combined with seasonal patterns. And we already talked about it. This is not a blah, blah thing that I just show a chart in the future. We talked about it and we recorded, so we have proof.
So guys, let's think of a couple of things. Salah is always very specific about seasonal patterns. And while we've seen them break those patterns, sometimes it feels like the more the life gets back to normal, or almost, as we now will have to use this transition out of this last year as sort of like a slingshot, in a way where we have seasonal patterns that people can use as a projection. We've got an unprecedented economic change and reopening story that we've never seen before, right? We have summer coming, the world is starting to reopen, so the demand for oil is going to be much grander as people start to travel again, get on planes again, get on cruise ships again, right? And that increased demand has also going to be catalyzed by the pent-up demand that people who have been sheltered in place, right? It's like if you hold somebody back, you know, there's that car race that goes 8 seconds, you know, where they spin the wheel, and then they just take off. You've got millions of people, hundreds of millions of people worldwide who have been locked in place, who have not been moving, right? And now who have not been using their cars, their planes, their trains, and their cruise ships and all the things. Look, our society is based so much on the consumption of oil and gasoline. So we're coming into summer, which is predominantly the travel part. We're coming into summer 2021, which is a year unprecedented in that people are starting to reopen in the world and they've been locked in place for a while. So you've got that incredible story happening, a perfect storm in a positive way. We've also got the inflation story, right, where we're seeing the interruption of the supply chain in so many ways. Some of it is a protective mechanism against the business model of no demand, right? A lot of companies and a lot of industries that are consumers of oil and gasoline basically shut down because there was no demand, or they at least sort of put the brakes on. Well, now you have the world reopening. And so everyone's getting back on track, online, as it were, in all different industries. And these are inflationary commodities, per se, oil being one of them. So where do we go from here? It's a fascinating story. I think it's important to note, as students of technical analysis, that if you're going to set up a trade, when things are trading near highs and appear to be broken up, there are two scenarios. Either this is hitting up against resistance, and we look at it far from moving average trade, we look at a double top, we look at what's really going on, are things stretched out? Or the fascinating, which is counterintuitive to one who doesn't have the education of technical analysis, is in a trend trade, as stocks, commodities, crypto, whatever it is, start going up, and they go up for a continuous 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 day, 3 weeks, in order to be a confirmation of a buy signal on the way up, you need it to revert back and hit up against one of the moving trend lines before it confirms that it's going higher. So while Salah just mentioned to you, well, it seems counterintuitive that we are waiting for it to pull back before we buy it, technical analysis proves us that, yes, these are, it's like climbing a mountain in stages. You get to base camp one, you rest, your body acclimatizes to the oxygen before you can go higher. Markets do that. Stocks do that. As we build these buildings, they stop, they consolidate, they churn, they burn, and then they go higher if that's the trade that is setting up. And as far as Salah is confirmed, that as we go from 60 to 70 and we break back down to a trend line, which may be a moving average line, depending on how you're following the EMAs, it could give you the significant signal that it's going higher.
Let me just go back to your fundamental point that you really draw it really perfectly, that this year is really unprecedented. Look, on average, in 30 years, seasonal speaking, from April to June, you get around 9% return on WTI. This year, 28%. So it's tripling the average that we have in 30 years. So it's exactly what you're saying. Why we are exaggerating, because everything was shut down. Now everything is coming and gets his recovery, and demand is getting higher, of course.
Peter, so Americans have returned to a more watchful spending habit. Now the most of the federal stimulus money is gone. Do you think this is also a sign that inflation won't go too high? Is that a good thing for the next month?
You know what? Look, as you know, I am not an economist, but definitely I love to see what's trending and what's in the news. What's the flavor? Le fruit de moment, as we say in French. What's the fruit of the moment? And obviously last week it was the Federal Reserve meeting and a story about inflation, actually talking about the 200-pound gorilla in the room, which was inflation, right? Last year, you know, last week it was the death cross of crypto. Last year, it was the inverted yield curve. Now it's the inflation story of the year, and the Federal Reserve addressed it in a big way. You know, it's not only the fact that they did not raise the interest rates, which no one presumed they would in this big Fed meeting we had last week, but it's the narrative, right? The news conference that Mr. Powell gives after 2:30 is what everyone's listening for. How is the employment situation looking? What are the projections for inflation going forward? And the number was higher than people expected for the projection of 3.4 to 4.5 coming into 2020, 1, 2, and 3. And that sort of spooked the market, I would say, to a certain extent, as we're seeing the cost of goods and services go higher. The market felt to me like an overreaction in a way because, you know, what I'm learning about the inflation story, it's a transient story. The economy is something, and also maybe there's no playbook for this. I would spin it over to Salah to know more of the historic data on this. But once again, this is new rules 2020, new rules 2021. The economic cycle, the recovery cycle is different now. There are different pieces of the puzzle in place. This is an ever-evolving story that there's no playbook for. So to presume that we are to gauge this inflation reaction to past ones, I think is a immature, uneducated point of view. To think that now, just because we are initially seeing an inflation story in conjunction with the level, the cycle of the recovery story coming out of a pandemic, there's no game, playbook for all of these things. And to think that just because we're seeing it initially, which makes perfect sense, that the initial reaction to a recovery story and a a global economy coming out of a complete global shutdown would cause inflation makes perfect sense to me. And I'm an uneducated person relative to economics. I am not an economist, but I'm just a forensic guy, broker, trying to understand why markets do what they do, why economies do. People who are economists tend to really look at a story like a diagnostician, and then suddenly it's etched in stone. My understanding and my way of educating myself on what's going on relative to the inflation story, I believe we need to look at this recovery story as a ever-evolving story, not like any other recoveries. And I think we need to look at the inflation story as one that has new components to it. And that just because we're projecting 2021 3.4 to 4.5, I understand some numbers came out, inflation today, that were better than expected. But I think that it will change as the commodity story, whether it's lumber, whether it's employment, which seems to be a recovery story here too, and an inflationary story, what people need to be paid to go back to work, what people need to be paid for their goods and services. So I said, once we go back online and the gears are lubricated and we start working, we start really coming off of the baseline where we've been, right? Things have been at a complete halt. Well, now we're starting to grease the engines. I believe this is going to be a transitional story, right? So people are going to be paid, need to be paid more money to get back to work. In some ways, that may put some pressure on the businesses, but in the long run, it will be a positive story for our economy, right? As things start to be produced at a faster rate and consumed at a faster rate, we will get to a point where these things will merge and it will settle down, right? The demand will meet the supply. It happens in stock markets. It happens in crypto. It happens in commodities. We see that, and it happens in oil. So this is an ever-evolving story. I think net-net, we saw last week this Federal Reserve, the fear, the chatter, the aggressive attention that was being paid to the inflation story. For me, you know what I always say, market does what it wants to do. The market tells us what it thinks of all this economic news. And while last week it was an aggressive pullback, an aggressive sell side coming into the market across the board, and it felt like they were fear-mongering to a certain extent, the market showed us that we came back in on Monday. We were up 500, we're up 100, we're up 200, right? And so the market's telling us that this was a better buying opportunity than a selling opportunity, that it was about a little more about emotion and people reacting to fear of inflation than one that where all that's happening, everyone coming online, there are a whole new generation of people and an appetite for the markets. We've seen that over the year. And when these people start getting back to work and putting money to work, the economy starts working again, whether we're going to see a blip in the inflation or not, the appetite for stocks and commodities is showing us that it's still here, right? If it wasn't here, last week's fear-mongering and inflation story would have been a way bigger sell-off than it was.
Absolutely. Let's move to Bitcoin. We talked about the death cross. I'm actually bearish. I see, if I look on technical patterns, I already described it and analyzed it. I think we will reach 20K as soon, maybe in weeks or in a month, I don't know. So timing is never, nobody was the best timer in trading. So anyway, but I get a lot of questions, Peter, and sure, you know, from those people who are new and have a huge appetite to learn about markets and to invest and trade. But now people come and say, hey, when is the is that now a good timing to buy Bitcoin? We have been at 60K, now we are at 30. Is that a good point? Should I wait? Should I start? What should I do? What can you give us to people just who are starting right now? Because from your experience, there have been a lot of markets in your life, not only Bitcoin, where this happened. So what can you give us as a small shout out to people?
So my partner, David Green, in Wall Street Global Trading Academy, always says, Peter, we've been doing this for 35 years. We've seen this movie before, okay? And there's a whole new generation of people who have never seen this movie, right? So all we can do is share our experience and try and motivate and educate people. You described the appetite we know is here. The education needs to come up to par with the appetite. And so while I say to people, the only thing they can do now, right, as a long-term investor, if that's who your audience is, historically markets go from the lower left to the upper right, long-term, put it away, you know, set it and forget it, and the chicken roast will be done when the bell rings. However, if you are a trader, and we have a whole new generation, 10 to 50 or more million people globally who are getting involved in markets, I say to them, they must give themselves the benefit of the doubt to put probability in their favor to be a winner more times than a loser, is to educate themselves on technical analysis. Technical analysis will tell you that it doesn't matter where Bitcoin was, where it came from, or where it was. Those are not indicators of where it's time to buy it. We saw that with the GameStop trade. It went from 2 to 20, 20 to 60, 60 to 483, down to 151, up to 185, down to 62, right? And if you're an uneducated person without the tools of technical analysis, I promise you, you are now sitting on the corner, smoking a Camel non-filter, drinking whiskey because you gave back huge potential profits. The bottom line is, technical analysis, as we just described with the oil trade, is shows you that you need to be patient, that when there are vacuums of stocks on the upside, there will be vacuums of stocks on the downside. And without the tools of technical analysis, understanding moving averages, trend lines, baselines, far from moving averages, relative strength index, overbought and oversold situations, you do not have at all the tools to know when to get into a stock. Just because a stock went from 20 to 180 doesn't mean when it's coming back down that you buy it down 10%, down 20%, down 30%. You don't do that unless the indices of technical analysis tell you to do so. And they will show you where the lines will cross, where there is an overbought or an oversold situation, where the stock is, where technical analysis tells us the stock is done, going down, and the probability is in your favor that it will now reverse and start to go back up. Otherwise, it's throwing darts at a board in the dark with sunglasses on. I beg for people, in a market that is seen from March 2020 to August 2020, we got back to even. Since then, we've seen 10, 20, 30%, some stocks over 100% rally. We've seen the meme stocks and the Wall Street Bets generation take stocks up hundreds and thousands of percent. Well, the market's not doing that anymore. The market is going through a rotation, a consolidation, a vacuum in so many different sectors and stocks. And just because a stock was at 2 and went to 200 and is now coming down doesn't mean that you can pick with your idea, well, if it was at 200, it's got to be a buy at 180 or 160, because that is really an uneducated, immature approach to trading. You will lose. We are here to teach you the tools with Wall Street Global Trading Academy, with you, Manuel, and you, Salah, the mastery of technical analysis. It teaches you patience, discipline, consistency, and practice. It teaches you about moving average lines, relative strength index, and pivot points. It gives you the tools in charting to know where the probability is where you will win more times than you lose. Not every winning trade is a winning, not every trade is a winning trade, right? If a trade is executed correctly, a winner is as good as a loser. But the bottom line is, what we want to impart to you all, okay, is to never turn a winning trade into a losing trade. There will always be many, many more opportunities. The only time you'll have no opportunities is if you turn a winning trade into a losing trade. Over and over and over again. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. We, as motivators, educators, teachers, and moderators, and journalists, as Manuel, are here to try and teach you this is not your grandfather's stock market, everyone. This is not your grandpa's stock market. It's all new here. And if you don't take the opportunity to learn technical analysis from me, from you, from Manuel, from Wall Street Global Trading Academy, you are selling yourself short of having an opportunity to become financially independent in a market that is so volatile. This is a generational opportunity if you have the tools. It's also a generational opportunity to throw it all away because you were stubborn.
Peter, last quick question. The SEC had planned to make a decision on Bitcoin ETFs last week, but they postponed to August 10th. Do you think Bitcoin ETFs will come, or when they come, they will come with a lot of more regulation?
You know what? Look, that's once again out of my wheelhouse, and I cannot. It's a complicated story. You know, I'm trying to, I still don't, I have to be honest. I still don't understand the whole digital space of the nooks and crannies. I know there's some kind of an entity that really doesn't exist. I know there are other kinds of coins. Some are tied to things with value, some are not. But for me, anything that goes from 2,000 to 60,000 back to 30,000 without any, and I'm not pro-regulation in that I don't want people to get hurt. I'm pro-education. I'm not pro-regulation. But with some of it, some comes other things, sometimes they come together. But whether, you know, it's, we also see this in the IPO space. Then when IPOs are on fire and there's an appetite for them, then they come to market quicker. We saw that with the SPAC story. This is a perfect example to answer your question. Suddenly SPACs became the fruit du moment, the flavor of the day. And they listed hundreds of them since January. And then they went from trading at $10 for the longest time. Then everyone saw, oh my God, a new trading opportunity. And they started trading at 10 and a half and 11. Oh my God, let's list 100 of them. And then they listed 100 of them and they went right down to 950 because there was an oversupply. We are in an auction market. When there's a high pent up demand, things go up. We always joke, why is the stock going up? More buyers than sellers. Why is it going down? It's nothing more complicated than that. When the stock goes up, there's more buyers than sellers. When the stock goes down, there's more sellers than buyers. In Bitcoin, there's a limited number of them in existence. So eventually it will go up. Okay, except some big whale decides to sell them all and go home, right? Whatever. So or leave the, or you know, or take his ball and leave the playground, right? So the bottom line is, are they here to stay? I'm not clear. You know, it's a funny story. The lovers of it love it all the time. The people who are having a contentious relationship with it love it today, hate it tomorrow, right? And we don't have to mention who those people are, right? There's some people who say we're going to start using it, but we got to regulate it. Then there are people who say we will use it no matter what. Then there are countries that said we're going to use it only and burn all our money. I mean, this story is it's like if you don't like the weather in Boston, wait a minute, it's going to change. If you don't like this crypto story, wait a minute, it's going to change, right? You know, Dogecoin, everybody loved it at 70 cents when Elon Musk went on Saturday Night Live, and now it's trading at 17 cents or wherever. There are people who bought it at 70. And my fear, and I'm going to pound it into the pavement over and over and over again, because I get a lot of flack on social media that I'm an old man and that I hate the meme thing and I'm not into the crypto and all this stuff. I'm not into any trade where you buy it and you're up 30% and you don't sell it and you spend 6 months trying to get back to even. In the great financial crisis, it took 8 years to get back to even. My friend Jim Cramer wrote a book about it, right? In this crisis, it took 3 months to get back to even. That should give people a perspective that the time to take profits is a much shorter term situation. If you're up 10, 20% in anything, take a profit and wait for another day tomorrow, right? Anybody with an education and experience in this world who has seen this movie before begs people to do that. When somebody says to me, when they're in AMC at 40 and it goes to 70 and they didn't take some money off the table, I say you're a little bit shot in the head, because yes, it could go to 100 tomorrow, but it could also go to 30, and that's what it did, right? So why wouldn't I want to let my biggest fear, as I say this over and over again, I'm so excited for whatever reason it took to have these 50 million new people, a whole new generation interested in the stock market, whether it's crypto, meme, equities, I don't care. Whatever brought you to the party, I'm happy about it. But I would hate to see you come to the party, have too much to drink, throw up, and never go back to another party, right? I would hate you to come to this party and be up $1,000, not take your profit. Tomorrow you're down 1,000 and you'd never come back to play with us again, right? So education, not regulation. Will crypto be the next thing? I have no idea. My best answer is I have no idea, okay? But if you're in any of these things, as a trader, as someone who's trying to find some short-term financial independence, if you're up 10, 20, 30% in anything, take the profits. Use risk management. We are doing a masterclass with David Green next week on risk and money management through the eyes of the meme generation. What does that mean? Stop orders. If I buy something at 10 and it goes to 20, either take some money off the table or put in a stop order at 17. And as it goes higher, use a trailing stop. It's common sense for us who have been doing this for 35 years. But for people who are using the internet as their robotic financial advisor, then they may blow up. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, Dr. Google, or the asset manager, Dr. Google.
Dr. Google. If you're taking medical advice from the internet, don't call me.
Guys, thank you for this movie this week. It was great, and I'm looking forward to the next part.
Right. This will be our story part two. Part two.
Part two.
I have the feeling there will be a lot of more parts coming up.
It will be a series. Oh, it is a series.
Yes. Oh, my God. Every 2 weeks. The Einstein of Wall Street at the
we'll
IG
be on Netflix,
Trading
dude.
Talk.
Watch us on Netflix, guys.
This is coming up later. All right, guys, thank you so much. Salah Edide Boumidi, the head of markets at IG, and the legendary Einstein of Wall Street, Peter Tuckman. Over 35 years on the floor of the New York trading floor. Unbelievable, guys. Thank you so much for this time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Luck, luck, luck.
And guys, thank you for watching. This was the IG Trading Talk for this week. More information on IG.com. Thank you so much. Take care.
Und wenn euch diese Sendung gefallen hat, dann abonniert gerne den Podcast von Inside Wirtschaft und gebt uns ein Like.